42 years ago, a little bundle just 3 days, let's say young, would lay here instead of me now sitting here. Without knowing, babies simply know, crying when hungry, simply do their diaper business, sleeping when tired. And when you look into their eyes, you fall into a vast, open and innocent, whatever, vastness. And we are here to find back to this mind state of just doing what needs to be done, painstakingly to unlearn, to loosen the knot of our habit patterns, to find back to our now conscious innocent, not trusting our thoughts, but to, like John Tarrant put it, jump into the void with only our courage and the beauty of the world to sustain us. In this talk, I like to tell you how I came to the path. At first, I thought only at the first physical contact with the path in form of a place, person or book. But then I realized that something was leading to it, made us, or me in this case, ready for the difficult work, the spiritual journey. To this talk, to my life, there are three strands. The childhood, the dark period of about, let's say, 5 years during puberty, and the time as I found my way into art and as I started to make art. I grew up as an only child of very loving parents in Berlin, former East Germany. I remember my childhood as a very sunny and happy time. It was a time where I still could feel the deep connection with everything and could rest in it. From this childhood, I will tell you some stories which I think had an influence over coming to the path, and which I still can remember very vividly. One of them was took place at my grandparents' home. It was some hours away from Berlin, and I spent most of my summers there. And I loved to watch ants. I was laying on my stomach on a camping bench, or how you call it, and was watching how these little animals were behaving and greeting one another and carrying stuff and attacking a little twig when I teased them. And I was fascinated. And one time I turned around and looked in the sky, and suddenly I realized, oh boy, this ants, they don't know that I'm here. They simply don't know. They don't see me. What about there is something else? What I can see? What can see me? Or so like a different dimension. This ends, then myself, and then something different. Another time during the summer, also at my grandparents' house, I have to tell that my grandmother, that was only my grandmother, and she lived together with my great-grandmother. And this great-grandmother, she could heal. She had the ability to say something like a chant, like a mantra, and then a special kind of virus disease disappeared. It was in Germany, you call it Rose, like the flower, so like rose. So one time during the summer, a West German car stopped in front of our house there, and a whole family climbed out. Also a woman bent down, couldn't really walk by herself, and looked very suffering, and they came in and begged my great-grandmother to do this with her because she had this kind of disease. But my great-grandmother was already in the late 80s and she did it a couple of times, and every time she did it she got sick with it and she was afraid that she wouldn't survive this. But they were so desperate. It's a saying when so this rose forms like a belt around your waist, a red one, and when this get closed, it's a saying, I don't know if it is real, but yeah, we heard from them that then this person will die. So, and it was short before, and finally my great grandmother did this and I got sent out, but I concentrated on what's going on there. And then after an hour or so, not too long time, they came out and the woman looked already much different. And they waved hello and took off. And I went back in the room in the house, and my great grandmother was really sick. She was laying there for days and we cared for her. But she recovered, and finally we got a letter from this family that this woman really got healed. And that had a tremendous impact on me. I thought, boy, there's something behind all this, what we perceive over our senses. There gotta be something more. In Berlin, where I mainly lived, I developed a kind of game for myself. I was going to streets I had known through streets which were very familiar to me. I had seen them every day, and then you don't see this anymore. It's gray and boring, and then I tried to imagine that I would be an alien. I wouldn't be from this earth, and I would see everything for the first time. So like, and then I wouldn't know what it is. I would see a car and wouldn't know that's a car, and that was fascinating. I loved this. And anyway, so what was gray and boring became suddenly very alive, vivid, and wonderful. One time also in Berlin, I was running up the stairs to our apartment, and suddenly I needed to stop in between, because I suddenly got this fear that I would forget how this was working, how I can run up the stairs, because I wasn't concentrated on it. I was already with my mind somewhere, what I like to do there, and it was a very strange feeling of, yeah, who is doing this? And it also was a feeling like something cracked open a little bit, and this wondering about, in this case, climbing up the stairs was shining through. As I was between 8 and 10, I can't pin it down anymore. I got sick of my having fear in the darkness. It was really terrible. Every time I needed to go to the bathroom during night, I was running through the little hallway until I reached the bathroom and switched on the light there. I also got haunted by nightmares where I was in a dark room and tried to switch on the light and it was not working. So I don't know how, but I started to teach myself to overcome this kind of fear. So when I was going to the bathroom, at first I tried to walk slow. So not to run, but to work slow. It wasn't so easy. And then I tried as I could manage this, I tried to stop in between, and that was, I still remember the feeling like your hairs and the neck getting straight, staying up. And then actually I was running the last part and switched on the light. And then somehow this was working too. And then I found a way to, during this staying there in the darkness, to turn around. And there was nobody. There was nothing. There was simply this dark hallway. And I turned around and there was still nothing. And so I suddenly I realized that that's only in my head. It's not real, this kind of fear. There is really nothing what I need to fear in darkness. Darkness is simply the absence of light. The following event, what I like to tell you, was something what I think let my childhood bubble really burst. It also took place at my grandmother's place during one of these long summers. I heard a fine mewing, like from very small kittens, and a muffled sound like something soft gets thrown against the wall of the house. I rushed around the corner and our neighbor stood there with a basket full of kittens. I was delighted and approached him, but suddenly my heart almost stopped beating. I saw most of them were dead and some still jerked. I stumbled back, looked at him in horror. "What did you do with them?" And he said, "Well, that's what we do. If we can't keep them, we throw them against the wall, put them together with a heavy stone in a basket, and drown them in the lake." "You murderer!" I cried out. And with tears in eyes, I ran into the house and cried there uncontrollable. My grandma tried to calm me down after a while we spoke about it, but I simply could not understand how possibly somebody could do this. I only got left with this painful, unbearable feeling of a broken heart. With this experience, mistrust came into my life and I started to become doubtful towards other people. One time during vacation, together with my mom at the Baltic Sea, we took a walk through some woods on a bluff. We admired the view over the sea. Suddenly there was a clearing and you could see far into the landscape. And I saw, you could see their fields and a little village in the background and trees. A dog was barking, clouds were flying by, and sun was shining, and I got this feeling to run, simply to run into this field, to open the arms, and like a bird to fly into it. And then in the same moment I realized, oh, I don't know where will I come out there? I don't know this place there. I could hurt myself. I could fall and nobody is there to help me. And what my mom would think about it. She wouldn't know where I am. And all these kinds of worries and concerns came up. And actually, I started to blame my mom for having these feelings, because she was a very anxious person with a lot of anxiety during my childhood and teenage time. And I formed a kind of habit pattern out of this, and had always a kind of harsh voice towards her, and it lasted almost over 10 years until during one of our holiday trips to Turkey, where I went with my mom during my art study time, so really long time later, it suddenly changed because, yeah, I will tell you. We met a Turkish friend of relatives of mine. He was the same age than me, and one time we just came to a wonderful countryside and started to go their wonderful path, and I don't know what's happened, but my mom said something, and then in this same kind of voice, I rose my voice again with, yeah, this harsh tone, and suddenly he pulled me aside and said with a very demanding voice, "Don't speak in this tone. She is your mother." You can imagine how I felt, and since then, every time it happened, I heard him saying this until I could stop to behave in this way towards my mother, but it took me a long time. Let me go back to this experience at the Baltic Sea, what I told you before. This what I experienced there, you can say, stood for the whole following time as teenager during puberty, the feeling of being caught and not to know how to get out there. It was definitely the end of this kind of absorbed play as child, where you were in harmony with everything. And I was terribly longing for it. Sometimes even went back to places where I experienced it, but the spell, yeah, was somehow broken. The main time as early teenager, I felt anxious about everyone. I did not know well enough, so it was, for instance, a torture for me to ride in public transportation. Especially during East German time, almost everybody did not trust even their neighbors. In subways, streetcars or buses, you looked into empty staring eyes, and when you entered one wagon, these dull eyes were looking at you, and you got sucked into this collective tightness and anxiety. I remember times where I was walking around in streets where really everything turned into a nightmare. I felt like a zombie. I somehow managed during these years quite good to the school time, but at home I almost collapsed and felt sluggish and lethargic. Also during this time, I tried to be a good girl to everybody. This brought me really off center. I thought it was a way to get back to the harmony I was longing for. But it also was a sign that I still did not find a own identity. I also deceived myself by trying to make friends with popular girls at school. Even I did not like them. Fortunately, I did not neglect totally, for instance, also with, let's say, the underdogs in school to interact. I always wished when I did this not to get seen with them. but somehow I felt a connection and saw they were in the same kind of loss than I. They only couldn't hide it well enough. So as time went by, I even started then that I stood up to defend persons if somebody did a too big injustice toward them, or so I was terribly shy. My hidey hole, to use a word from John's talk last weekend, was to sleep and to watch TV. Luckily, it wasn't all alcohol or drugs. I used it clearly to forget about everything. But as time went by, I got a kind of tired of it, and into this dull mind state, when I was doing this, when I was hanging out there in front of the TV or short before sleeping, I seeped into kind of awareness and realized what I'm doing there. I continued to distract myself with sleep and TV, but gradually in between I could somehow step back and look at myself, look at things around me, and in this rare moments everything became plain and simple. It only lasts for some seconds, and then I was back on my horror trip. But something melted down during this few seconds, and I started to feel the connection to myself and the surrounding things again. I also began to recall this experience, what I just told you, when I got carried away and simply looked out of the window, for instance, at a tree or at clouds, at sunbeams dancing over that pavement, and with this the tightness fell off a little bit. And I got more relaxed, and at least for this moment. All this was also in struggle for finding identity. I actually imitated close friends in their way to see the world, in their kind of projects, what they did, without being conscious about it. I remember one time as my best friend during this time got really kind of angry with me. She couldn't stand it anymore and told me about it. I felt miserable and winced, but in the same time, I trusted this friend and did not deny what I did. So we end up speaking about it, and this was actually very, very helpful, because she told me what she saw in me, and with this, I realized for the first time that there is something very unique, that there's something in every single person, there's really something really unique, and it's the blindness towards myself started to fall away. It also dawned on me that everybody sees the world in a different way, and until then I really thought that everybody sees the world in the same way than I do. So over the next following years, I learned to reflect. I started slowly but really powerful to realize how important it is to know what we are doing and why we are doing it. and that we need to know about our position in the world. I still remember my amazement about moving out of this living from the unconscious, from the guts, into something what let my heart beat, what let me got active and engaged with the world. And over the time, for the first time, I felt compassion towards myself and others. And I also saw when I'm sad, everything is sad. And when I change how to look at it, everything will change too. By the time I finished my 12 years of school, and that was a point where I really needed to decide what I like to study or what else I would like to do. During the school time, my mother got me to do several things. So for instance, I went to ballet classes 2 times a week as I was 6 until I was 11. At least it taught me perseverance and not to fall into a bad body posture, but otherwise it wasn't going so deep and I can't remember so much. It was a lot of fun, but it wasn't the right thing for me. I also went to an art class as I was 12 for a couple of years, but somehow I did not, this wasn't the right time yet. The most interest I showed as I went to a microbiology course. We even worked together with the water industry, which sent us samples of water from different lakes around Berlin, and we needed to find out which kind of algae are in there. So I could spend hours in front of this microscope and stare into this different kind of world and to study it and see all these teeny things moving around there. With this experience, my wish got formed to study biology, but very quickly I learned that you have to have connections with the government during East German time, or you should be, for instance, a champion in deep sea diving, like it was happened during my time as I tried to get this study. So when I went with my parents to the different colleges where you could study it, and when we tried to speak with persons who make the decisions which one will get the place, it was always like running into walls. It was impossible. It was really impossible, and so I couldn't get this place, and I was, confused. I hadn't known what to do. And then back in Berlin, a very typical procedure during East German time began with getting suggestions from my former school which kind of study place is still available. And during this time, I somehow thought, oh my, when I don't take a place, I never will get one again. So I got talked into a place of electronic industry. Fortunately, it did not start right away, this kind of study, and I needed to go for a period of practical instruction into a business related to this kind of industry. And I made there incredible experiences, and if there would be time, I would love to tell you about it. It's really, it's so funny. last time as Robert Sensei was here, I told him about it and he was laughing without end. I said, Britta, you should write this down. That's so funny. So maybe I should do this. Yeah, during this time I really woke up and got active, because for sure I could say after some months, never ever I will work in an office, and I'm definitely not a person to sit behind a desk all the time. So with good luck, I could quit all this, and with good luck I started education as painter for old buildings which needed to get restored. And also as I worked in this office, I started to make art. I needed to have an outlet to feel grounded, to get in contact with this what makes you to a human being. Otherwise, yeah, it was too strange there. And every time I made a drawing or a figure without knowing how to do it, I needed somehow I found a way, but every time I did it, I put everything in it, and it was, when I did it, it was the only thing that mattered. All the other stuff fall away, and actually I felt free like a child as I was playing, totally merged with something, merged into something. During my education as painter there, I attended the evening school for art. And during this time, I think I went there for 2 years. That was the time as the wall came down. And I think we don't have time that I go more into it, but it was simply a incredible time to experience this, to be there and to have the possibility to go over and to see part of Berlin you never had seen, and looks really absolutely different. I was going through the streets there, and because I'm such a visual person, I got headache after some minutes because of all this advertisement around there, and I went over the first time. I went over almost every day to learn how to walk there, not to stare at everything. It was really funny. So this kind of evening school for art was also the best qualifications to get a place at an art school to study art. And actually this got, by the time, my biggest wish, the wish to make art to my profession. To make it to your profession, to put everything aside and to learn which way is the best to express myself, to get other people interested in my way of seeing the world in form of sculpture, drawing or objects. And this was actually the main thing we did at the art school. You get a place in the studio from the school, and then they leave you alone, and you have to come up with something creative, with meaning and depth. actually the place at the art school I only got over the detour of missing the real date for the exam. That you need to go through this exam to attend. You really need to attend this exam to get in place at the school. There's no way around it. And as I discovered the exam is already over, I got incredibly desperate. I was running around in my apartment and almost banged my head against the wall. It was 1 week. It was already over, and I was traveling. The wall was away. I was traveling in West Germany. I was going to Nuremberg and looked there at a different art school, and was even thinking about to maybe go to this art school. But in this moment, I got so desperate that I forgot all my fear and worries, and suddenly I felt an incredible calmness, and out of this calmness I acted. I grabbed all the stuff what I prepared for the test, like sculptures, portrait heads, and a big map of drawings, and went over there to the school and found somehow the place and the person I need to speak with. And believe it or not, I found a way to repeat the exam, although everything was already, like I said, over since 1 week. I still don't know how this could have happened. After they looked at all the stuff what I did there, one of the profs gave me a call, and they even accepted me, and I could start studying art right away at the school. One time during the art study time there, I sat together with my art teacher whom I met the first time as I was going over there so desperately, and he said, "Britta, it never happened before, and I guess it never will happen again." And he said that he still was wondering about it, and at the end we both laughed at about it. Yeah, I think there's no time to get more into details what I would like to do. So for instance, what I did, what kind of art I did or so. But one thing I like to mention, I managed during the 6 years of school to get 1 year off. And during this time, it's also a wonderful story, but there won't be time too. I built a cello, a real functioning music instrument. So both experiences, so the way how I got the art study, the place there at the school, and also the time during I built the cello, showed me when you set everything on it, when you set everything on it what you like to do, and when you put your whole heart into it and your whole being, you really can do it. So I realized everything starts with a single step, and even you don't know how to do it, you start somehow doing something and start somehow. And the only thing what you need to do is then to trust the process. Pablo Picasso once said, "I'm always doing that which I cannot do, in order that I may learn how to do it." another person, Constantine, oh, I don't know this person, said, love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art. When we are full of ourselves, art cannot flow through us. Our art becomes rigid, limited by the boundaries we have created for ourselves. Yeah, you see, making art is like a spiritual journey. It's the same kind of being intuitive. It's the same kind of non-linear and very experimental, and you have to return to a state of not knowing, a willingness to trust what the next moment would bring. So really in contact with the path, with Zen, I got after finishing the art study, after leaving the school there. It was at first in form of two books from Charlotte Yoko Beck. I remember one title is Everyday Zen, and the other I can't remember anymore.
Nothing special,
yeah, thank you. And I read this and was so stunned. I read it in one night. I think almost both books I found in a bookshelf at a friend's place where I was babysitting, and the little guy was sleeping there, and I was reading and thought, boy, that's incredible. Somebody finds words for something. But during this dark period, I thought it's only my problem. And so that's the two books. And the second was I started working for a handicapped woman to get some money, because as artist you barely can make money, especially when you leave the school, just left the school. And this woman practiced Tibetan Buddhism. And one time we went to go to a talk with Prabhasadama. I actually found a little biography in one book. It's called Woman of the Way by Sally Tisdale. It was very interesting to read this. So if somebody is interested, yeah, it's written there in this book. And during this talk, something very deep inside of me started to resonate for the very first time. And I had known this, what she is practicing and teaching, I have to do too. So after this talk, I went up there and asked where I can practice this. And it was short before Vesak, and then I went to this place where the celebration took place, and there was a table set up with information material, and I grabbed one, and in this way I found the Buddhistische Gesellschaft, the Buddhist society in Berlin. But at this place they are practicing different spiritual groups every day of the week, and at first I was going to a group where it did not feel right. They drank tea together before the sitting. They faced inside the room, so they don't face the wall, and they hold the hands right in, so the mudra posture of the hand they hold right in front of your navel, so you needed to hold up all the time your hands, and then we sat already on our cushions, and one woman turned to me and whispered that that it is very dangerous to meditate for too long time, and there's even a group here at this place. They sit not for 20 minutes, they sit for 35 minutes, and this three times in one row. I felt, I never had done this, but somehow I felt, it felt so odd that she was talking to me, and then it's, yeah, like you can imagine, this what she was talking about, that was exactly the place where at the end end up, and that was the Berlin Sitting Group, the Berlin Zen Group, which still get led by Robert Goldman, now Sensei. And that's my talk, and I like to end with some lines by John Tarrant I really like. Faith is not belief. Faith is charged waiting. Faith sometimes looks like intention, but it is different. It hopes for no particular change, is content to continue until change is given. And even if change is not given, when we have faith, we follow the practice we have chosen, simply and with love. And how we feel about, and whether our understanding has deepened yet, these considerations are none of our business. So, I wonder if there's still time for question and answer. Yeah. Yeah.
What decided you to come to the U.S., to Rochester?
Oh, that's a long story too. I think we won't have time. That's, I came 2004 here, and somehow I realized I have to be here, but I hadn't seen a way. I really hadn't seen a way. And I went back to Berlin and tried to make it more intense there, the sitting. So to find own rooms for sitting and all this, but yeah, a lot of stuff changed during this time. A very good friend of mine died, and she was already 86. I was going with her to the death process, and the relationship broke, and I worked together with this guy, so I lost the job too, and needed money, and my apartment was too big, so probably I needed to move out of this apartment, and it was really a lot, and I spoke with a very good friend during this time, and she said, "Oh, brother, you have a lot on your plate." And I said, "Yeah, I'm glad I just made a decision to only to go for a sesshin here 2005 in April, and then it dawned on me, my, what am I doing when I'm coming back from this Rochester trip, from the sesshin, and it was like falling into a black hole, but somehow I was hovering over it, and then without thinking I realized and almost cried and thought, oh my gosh, Lara, that's the possibility to go to Rochester. That's it. So I suddenly realized, oh boy, I don't need to do anything there in Berlin. It's already set up. I only need to go.
Sure, there.
Yeah. So it was, sure, it needed a lot of preparation with visa and this, but that was the decision. It was really funny.
Rita, what artwork are you doing? Any artwork now?
I stopped actually doing art. There was a moment, it was before I came permanently here, that I went out with my camera, I needed to I started making photography. 99 was also the time as I started practicing, and somehow I saw a very interesting image, and usually I really needed to take this picture, but there came a moment where I simply could pass this. I looked at it and thought, oh, that's beautiful. I could take a picture, but I don't need to do it. And somehow it really felt like the practice took over. So there's this kind of similarity, and I don't need it to do it anymore. I'm wishing to find somehow a way to connect this again, to get creative, but I don't know yet, and I trust the process. I think it will show up somehow.
Richard, there is this was a long time ago. I can't even remember the story that well, but I was really amazed by it. Some story you told me was connected to the wall when you were in East Berlin, and then there was somebody on the other side of the wall, and it had to do with seeing something. Do you remember that story?
Oh yeah.
What was that?
Oh yeah, that was short before the wall broke down, and I was working as painter there, and I was working close to the wall, close to the Tiergarten. That's a big park there in Berlin, and I saw every morning when I went there, I saw a huge flock of crows flying from the west part to the east part. And after the wall broke down, I got in contact with a man, and we were together, so we fell in love with one another, and somehow I don't know how he told me that he had seen this from the other side of the wall exactly during the same time. So every morning he was living in a big studio. He was an artist too, and he needed to collect wood to fire up the fireplace, and so he went there every morning and saw the same cross flying over from the west to the east, and I was staying at the other side from the wall and saw them flying too.